shows in Antarctica today. It shows all over the world. The planet is reestablishing the balance at our cost.
Oscar-nominated actor James Cromwell and Pramila Malik are going to jail today for their nonviolent protest against a natural gas-fired power plant that uses frack gas in Orange County, New York. I interviewed them Thursday with Nermeen Sheikh. The activists will first hold a rally at the plant construction site, then turn themselves into jail. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
And thank you so much for tuning in to WHFR.FM, WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. It's now time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is Friday, July the 14th, 2017. Is today Bastille Day? I know President Trump was in France as a special guest of their president, Macron, to celebrate. But of course, their day starts earlier than ours, so I'm not sure. I believe the 14th of July is Bastille Day, where they celebrate the storming, where the breaking of it's the beginning of the revolution for freedom from dictatorship, and hundreds of years ago, of course, before our revolution, they did depose, actually by beheading, their monarch, Louis the 14th, I believe, and his wife, who part of the mythology, and it may have been a real quote, but she was quoted because people say that people were starving in Paris, and her feeling was, as the big-time ruler and rich person isolated from the masses, then let them eat cake. If they don't have bread, let them eat cake, which is what she would have done, I guess. So Marie Antoinette, I believe, was her name. Whether or not that famous quote is real, supposedly Patrick Henry didn't actually say, was it Patrick Henry? Give me liberty or give me death. Somebody said that. But it wasn't true. It wasn't fake news. But it sounds good, and it's sort of in the spirit of things, right? So maybe that doesn't hurt too much. Well, we do news from Dearborn and the surrounding area, and trying to keep you updated on things that fall between the cracks that the major media in the Detroit area don't cover. So we go a little more in-depth, a little different perspectives at times on what's happening that you won't hear on any other station. So that's what we do here for an hour each week. And if you can't, of course, catch the show at broadcast time from 1 to 2 o'clock. I know many of our listeners do listen to our podcast from our website, whfr.fm. And just click on the button Talk Shows in the middle of the homepage, and then click on just two choices. Click on the Journal, WHFR Journal, not the Tuesday Forum. We have two big talk shows every week, two big hours, and this one's the Journal, and then select the date. So if you wanted to hear the show, for example, you would click on July 14th, 2017. And those go back a few years. If you want to see what we said a couple years ago, why, I'm not sure, but there it is. Okay, we want to begin with information from one of our special guests. And this is not a commercial. This is, I guess, it's kind of a public service announcement for Henry Ford College. But I had a nice interview yesterday with our vice president for academic affairs. And here's that interview. Listen up.
We have Vice President Michael Nealon from Henry Ford College in the studio, and there's a special event coming up on Thursday, July 20th, right here on the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, and it's an adjunct faculty fair. That sounds great, Dr. Nealon. Does that mean there's a carnival with rides? And no. It's a different kind of fair.
Yes. But it's certainly one that I hope people will turn out for. It's great to be with you again. And this is a favorite subject of mine to really speak about. We are a dynamic learning community. And so we're always looking not only for new students with which to work in our programs, but new faculty members to be able to share their expertise, their knowledge, their learning, and their creativity. And so we find ourselves oftentimes in a position where we can bring on new folks who have something to share, who have a passion for teaching, and who maybe at that point in their life, we're taking on one or two, three courses maybe, is a good working load for them. What we find in many cases is that someone who was working in the field of their discipline really resonates well with students in a classroom because they can bring so much real life experience to what's being taught. So, for example, students getting an opportunity to take an accounting class with someone who spends most of her time or most of his time as a certified public accountant. It really works very well, and so we're happy to extend an invitation and opportunity to many of your listeners.
Yeah, I left out the word job fair when I introduced it, so I was going for the joke, so apologies there.
Okay.
But yes, it's an adjunct faculty job fair. We're looking for adjunct faculty. Adjunct is the word we use. It's pretty fancy. Part-time. Other people are working part-time as teachers here, and that's always been the case at community college, and it was always a principle, even when I started in the last millennia here, not too far back, but it was 19-something, and people could add to the educational experience of students because of their professional experience in addition to their teaching credentials, usually in the same area.
That's exactly right,
yeah.
And it helps us kind of keep the community critically engaged in the teaching and learning that happens at our college. Mm-hmm. So to be able to bring in colleagues from business and from industry, from government, from actually any of the agencies that are out there that connect or align with those programs of study, it enables us to also put students in a classroom with someone who is walking the walk and already living the dream that they hope for themselves.
I could read the list that's in front of me here of the areas at the college that would like to have more applicants to fill sections that probably starting in the fall. But I don't know how fast I can read here. I'll do it anyway. Accounting, Advanced Excel, which is a spreadsheet, I know that. American Sign Language, Anatomy and Physiology, Arabic Language, Astronomy, Automotive Technology, ASE Certified, Biology, Business Administration, Chemistry, Computer-Aided Design, also known as CAD Systems, Computer Information Systems, CIS, Computer Numerical Control, CNC, CNC Gauging and Inspection, Criminal Justice, Electrical Manufacturing Maintenance, Engineering, English Composition, one of my favorite areas since I started with that, English Language Institute, which is our special program, which is really very high quality for people that want to learn English as a second language.
Exactly.
Really, really a special facility. And there, of course, there are a lot of people that do get their degrees in teaching English as a second language. And so we need people for that English Language Institute program. Fluid Power, Gauging Inspection, Human Resources Management, Industrial Sewing and Pattern Making. Yes, that's a college-level program, folks. Industrial Sewing and Pattern Making. Lean Six Sigma. I don't know what that is.
You know, this is working in the world of continuous process improvement.
Oh.
And so businesses and industry use Six Sigma or Lean Six Sigma in order to streamline and perfect and improve their services to their customers.
So sort of like efficiency experts.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Why did they say that? No, it's an actual program.
It is.
Capital L, capital S, capital S. So, yeah,
yes.
It's a philosophy, too. Machine Tool is another area. Management, business management. Master CAM NC. Okay. You know that one?
This one, I believe, is in our telecommunications area.
Okay. All right. I'm not sure. Okay. Mathematics, mechanical manufacturing maintenance. If you know these areas and what the names mean, folks, yes, maybe you could teach it if you had the right background and credentials. But medical insurance specialist, physics, respiratory therapist, robotics, tutors in math and writing, tutors in health sciences, nursing and non-nursing, and welding. And there are some other openings in the future, they mentioned, too, that we might be able to accommodate adjuncts, obstetrics, pediatrics, medical surgical, and psychiatric. Now, there's different credentials require for different programs. Basically, it's a master's degree in the subject area.
A master's degree in the subject area is required for anyone who is teaching in those general education areas, or those areas, if you'd rather think in terms of, they transfer on, and usually people are pursuing a bachelor's degree or higher to work in the field. Mm-hmm. That is consistent with the accreditation of Henry Ford College. But for many of the ones on your list that are more career-based, more occupationally based,
technical-based,
if you will, as well. A degree one step higher than the associate degree, with the appropriate licensure or the appropriate certification, is all we're looking for there. And again, your experience and your expertise are what really our students are craving, and that really adds tremendously to our learning community.
Right. So some of that would be, and if, especially if they had some particular certification in those technical areas or those career areas, that might be equal to the degree requirement for the academic areas.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I noticed that we did mention tutors, folks. That is a special category here, and we do hire people for that. But you need at least an associate degree. That is a two-year degree in that particular occupational discipline. But if it's a credit transferable course, then it requires a bachelor's degree in education or in the tutoring subject area. So a little bit less intensive in terms of academic work as a tutor. I would say, first of all, we didn't give the time on this, but we are talking about the Henry Ford College Adjunct Faculty Job Fair, all happening at one place for 3 hours on Thursday, July 20th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Right here on the main campus of Henry Ford College. And it is going to be in what building?
It's going to be in the L building.
Oh, yes.
And that would be in the Rosenau rooms, which are right there on the first floor, very easy to find. There will be deans and there will be faculty colleagues with whom you might have a chance to meet, discuss not only your own interests and your passions, but your qualifications and credentials. And we'd love to have more people join our family.
This can be a one-stop experience, too, if they bring resumes and transcripts with them, although officially, transcripts have to be received directly from a registrar at the college, right? I mean,
an official
you can have
transcript.
A copy of it to get started with, I guess.
Yeah, and in most cases, people can arrange that to be sent automatically and electronically from the school from which they receive their degree, oftentimes for minimal cost.
Right. And they can do, as you said, we have various departmental division people available to give more information, but also do the interview, the screening interview anyway.
Very true.
And so that would be a big help. I also noticed it indicated on the press release, and this has been in both of the Dearborn weekly papers in the last week or so, but it's also on our hfcc.edu website, full information that we've given here. But if you're unable to attend, and I think this is, if you're interested in whatever area, there's nothing wrong with putting in an online application, sort of a preemptive strike, if you will, even if there's not an opening or availability right now.
No, in fact, I would encourage your listeners to regularly check that site because needs will arise throughout the semester. We want to be able to meet the demands, the interests, and the needs of our students. And as that fluctuates, we're oftentimes in a position where we can bring on another team member.
That website, in terms of the online application anyway, is hfcc.edu. peopleadmin.com. Okay, so that's, again, the main college website that probably has a link to this. Once you find human resources department in there, is hfcc.edu. But if the online application is what you're thinking of directly and you want to go straight forward with that, it's hfcc.peopleadmin, so that's the word people with A-D-M-I-N, .com. Okay. Well, I think this, hopefully, it goes well, because it's a great time. And it's after, if people have a day job, this is, you know, a little later in the afternoon, 3:30 to 6:30. So they should be able to,
yeah, we try rendezvous. To accommodate our mm-hmm. workers.
Of course, even on hfcc.edu website, I mean, there's names and information, different department and coordinator heads, and they can always make a phone call, of course, or send an email directly to these people, too, if they want more information that way. But this is a all-in-one-place thing. In fact, maybe you've got background or education in a couple of different areas, and we've got all the people there to answer your questions. You know, maybe you want to be in English, or maybe science. You could find out the kinds of classes available and a little more background and see what's happening here. So it's a great time to do it. You know, always need qualified adjunct faculty here at Henry Ford College. Oh, let's see. I guess that's all, other than repeating the information. I guess we should mention that in terms of somebody's saying, well, what do you pay these people? We have a very competitive pay rate. We pay pretty well compared to the other community colleges in the area. And I'll just make the endorsement is that our campus here is a great place to teach. I mean, clean and well-maintained. And right now, and a few weeks before fall, there's a lot of maintenance work being done. So it's a little busy on campus. And the parking lots were tore up last week a little bit.
We're getting things ship-shape the faculty and the students to come back
this
in the
fall.
This
is the time we've got to do that work.
Yes,
so that's
indeed.
Why it's if you take an early visit to the college, maybe as a student, if not as an adjunct faculty person thinking about being here, it's going to look a little bit unkempt, but it's progress. That's what they say, right? It's all because we're making great progress. And the campus is in very good shape, but there's always things that have to be done when you're running a full-time institution of higher learning. I'm impressed every year. Of course, we always had to plant more grass seed, but it's coming up nicely now. The rain has helped, but oh my gosh. And the roof, we have a little leak here in the student center that is being fixed. Well, maybe not today, because there was more rain that kept them off there, but it got started yesterday. And you know, these things are happening, folks. It's a great place to work, and it's a very congenial campus, too, administrators included. Dr. Nila.
Thank you. Well,
and also the other faculty, the full-time faculty will make you part of the family. So hope you can get here. If you're interested in certainly into a supplement for your day job, come on by Henry Ford College and investigate the possibilities for a adjunct job in one area or other teaching here. And I know I keep trying to tell my daughter, who's a full-time teacher in Southfield Public Schools, but she's got a master's in science, so she hasn't done college teaching, but, you know, 20-plus years in the junior high area. So
that's right.
Probably
right.
Counts as something, you know, and certainly for whatever the entry-level classes are. So a lot of people may not consider it. So maybe it's not yourself listening to the show today, but if you know of any others that would like to come and just explore, I mean, they don't have to have resumes and transcripts with them at that moment either. It can be just an informational session for people.
Absolutely.
And then we can follow up rather quickly. I should say, finally, it was because I was hired originally to the college because I already had my application in, but there was nothing available when I put my application in. But there was an opening 4 months later, it turned out. And so I was one of the first of the group to be interviewed. And so it always pays to look ahead.
You have to be in it to win it.
Yeah, right. Ooh, all right. That's a competitive edge here from Henry Ford College, future-driven and all that, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, Dr. Michael Nealon, who is the Vice President of Academic Affairs.
Yes.
Okay, finally, I got to ask, because this is what we do on the WHFR Journal. We ask silly questions that I can't figure out. It used to be called the Division of Academic Education. So is there any real big difference between academic education and academic affairs?
Well, you know, I believe that the college...
You would know as a technician in this area. I mean,
the college reason. Had previously made a distinction between studies that were in that general education transfer area and those that are career and technical education
right,
programs.
I remember that. Yeah.
And I think rightly so. We think more holistically now about educating our students.
That's right.
And many of the jobs that were available at one time with minimally an associate's degree are requiring an advanced degree or a bachelor's degree. So it would be unfair to call a career and technical education program non-transfer because there are opportunities that stretch beyond us. But what I will say is that, folks who arm themselves with an associate's degree from Henry Ford College will do as much as 3 times better in the workplace than a person that does not have that credential. So for the would-be students that are listening out there as well, I encourage you to look at the programming at Henry Ford. And if the thought of using us as a springboard to a bachelor's degree is not what you're interested in, but you're looking for that connection right to the workforce, we're very, very strong in the business and industry trades, lots of opportunities there. And for students that are not aware of this fact, the trades, especially right now, are suffering with an immense deficit of workers to fill the jobs that are very high-paying jobs. Mm-hmm. So I do hope that folks take a look. And you'll notice that many of the adjunct positions that you were able to rattle off there very eloquently, and but many of them are in those career technical education areas offering fantastic employment opportunities and career opportunities and futures for our students. And that's what we do, right? We transform lives. We build better futures. That's being future-driven. That's Henry Ford College.
Yeah. Obviously, we started with Henry Ford giving us the space and maybe some money, too, but at least the space back in the late 1940s. Yes, he gave us a big check. I remember it was physically big, I know, to get us started here on this campus.
Be careful, because you sound like you were there, and I know that
quite.
You don't
I
want
just saw
to,
the photograph.
I know you don't want to imply that.
Just a photograph. We did start in 1938, but we were in one of the high schools here in Dearborn at that time. But to have this big campus and the idea of technical education, Ford Motor Company under Henry Ford, they were doing their own sort of technical training to get some of their people up to speed. And they decided it would be much more appropriate to open it up to all people, as well as specific Ford Motor Company technical programs. And so we did get money towards those classes. And it did take us until 1960 or so to get this campus up and rolling here. 1962, I think we officially opened the Evergreen Road campus with the first group of buildings. But so we've always had the connection with the technical programs, the technical degree programs, and of course, many of them, of course, you can go on and get a 4-year degree in the same area at another school. And finally, there's so much to say, I know, but have to mention that we have a 4-year degree program right now in hospitality education.
For
those people that want to get the full degree right here at this campus. Hopefully someday, if the legislature gets going, the nursing or the allied health career area.
We would love to add nursing.
Sure.
We'd love to add computer information systems and to continue to offer students the opportunity to get to the bachelor's degree without ever leaving Dearborn.
Sure. And it's not even the legislature wouldn't do this just make us a 4-year school because they know that there are fine programs in many areas at 4-year degree universities already around here. But in certain areas like hospitality education, nursing, computer science, we have pretty advanced programs and there's a big demand for people in these areas. And so it's appropriate to have more places for them to go, maybe even at less cost since our tuition is less than the typical 4-year university.
These are stellar programs, and students make, I think, an exceedingly smart and best first choice by thinking of Henry Ford.
First choice, best choice. I think it was a slogan one or two back, by the way. But thank you, Dr. Neilan, for being with us today.
Great to be with you.
And we'll try to get the word out. And again, this is Adjunct Faculty Job Fair, Thursday, July the 20th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the L Building, also known as the Mazzara Building, here on the main campus of Henry Ford College, 5101 Evergreen Road. So if you or someone would like more information or would actually like to apply, just come on by at that time.
And that was actually Wednesday when I talked to Dr. Nilan, and I just want to remind you again to repeat, that is next Thursday, July 20th, 3:30 to 6:30 in the afternoon in the L Building. That's the Mazzara Administrative Center and Conference Center. And so come on by and check out that possibility for either, you know, for a part-time job here at Henry Ford College in teaching. But also on Thursday the 20th, this is the new WHFR Journal, of course. Jay Koronek with you for this hour, for this week, and it is July 14th. But next Thursday also, after the job fair is done, if you're done with that, got this on your schedule, there is a special presentation. It's, I was going to say workshop, but it's more than that. There's a presentation by a freelance web developer from the Dearborn area to talk about net neutrality, talking about internet here and a concept called net neutrality. What is it? Why should we care? The FCC, Federal Communications Commission, is very close to having the final word on whether or not there will be sort of a neutral playing field, even playing field for everybody to use the internet at the same speed. And all the big companies don't want to do it that way because they want to divvy up the speed so they can charge more money from big users, big corporate users. It's a somewhat complex total story. The League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, are sponsoring this presentation because they feel it's an important issue. They are in favor of it. They do take positions, not on candidates or political parties, but they take positions on issues. And this is not just the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, but also League of Women Voters in the U.S. too. So this is the national position as well as the local position, and the local folks have pulled together this information session featuring Timothy Damore, that web developer that I mentioned from the Dearborn area. And it's just that this is happening on July 20th, and the FCC is taking direct input from everybody. Anybody wants to leave a comment on their website, fcc.gov, that you should be able to find a place to leave a comment on this, on the net neutrality issue, by just going to fcc.gov, by the way. But the cutoff for comments from the general public or anyone, any corporation wants to get into this and take a side, on the 17th. And the 17th is Monday. I'm not sure if Monday's the cutoff, or so I would say if you haven't done it, I've already done that. I've gone to the website. You'll find a link probably at League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights website, which is lwvddh.org. Or you can go to this meeting, at least for the information and the background on what will happen shortly, because the FCC will just make their decision sometime after the closing of the public comments, whether they'll do it quickly or wait a week or two. There's an awful lot of nonprofit citizen groups that are totally against not having net neutrality. They believe it's a very important principle for a fairness and access to information for everyone in our society, not just the rich big companies controlling it all. And where is this being held? Okay, you can just show up Thursday, July 20th at 7 p.m. here in Dearborn, 120 North Military at Cherry Hill, Christ Episcopal Church Fellowship Hall. They're sort of special, you know, the conference room. So it's a fellowship hall. It's not in the church, but Christ Episcopal Church, blah, Fellowship Hall. And that's 120 North Military at Cherry Hill, 7 p.m. next Thursday. It's good to get out and about and talk to real people about these issues. Ask what questions you want. You know, we can't take questions here at the station because, well, first of all, our phone lines are fine, but our phone equipment in the studio that we raised money during our pledge drive in the spring have not been replaced yet. And it's difficult for us to answer any phone calls. Not impossible, but it's difficult at this point. The equipment should arrive on campus soon, if not already, but it's going to take engineers and a few people with programming knowledge to actually install them. This is a $5,000 replacement package for broadcast radio station telephone interfaces, it's called. And otherwise, we just can't, you know, easily or at all in some cases place phone calls from inside our studios. Now, in our office side, that's different. Those are different kinds of phones that the college provides, and we're not talking about that right now. So that's coming in soon, probably within 2 weeks we'll have better capability there. But you know, this show has never been a call-in show, and that's because we need even more equipment and screeners. Not screamers, but screeners, people to screen the calls coming in, and then so we can sort of pace the comments on the air and balance the points of view. So if you get someone that's for an issue, you usually would want to follow that up with someone who's against the issue. But if you're just punching buttons in the studio, you don't know who's calling next, or if they called a second time or something. So that's why you need a separate professional person to talk to these people, find out what they want to talk about, put a summary up on a computer screen for the DJ, and then put them in a queue, put them in line, and the DJ gets to choose based on the opinion and the point of view that they see in front of them, and to keep the discussion going on somewhat of a fair and balanced way. And we don't have that capability yet. The new system will give us the capability, but do we have enough volunteers? Nobody here in Studio B right now, so no, I don't have anyone either producing this new show or sitting in with me. Well, always happy to have volunteers. You have to take our training class. Go to our website, whfr.fm, and see how to join if you're interested in that. You know, Kitty Love is here. She's getting ready for her blues show at 2 o'clock, but that takes prep. She's got to choose the music. She doesn't just play CDs at random, you know. Well, let's see what this one sounds like. No, we don't do that. It'd be a waste of time for you, right? We at least have to, well, as I say on some other stations, curate. That is, with our own professional expertise, we're making judgment calls about what's the best for you to listen to. What's the new stuff, the best of the new stuff, and what, you know, what things that that you can't hear on other stations, too, that they won't play because, well, you haven't heard it yet. You're not aware of it, and they're interested in ratings and all that. But we're just doing a public service here. Okay. All righty, then. As long as we're talking about technical things, I have to mention our classical music problems. For the last 3 weeks, yours truly has been calling engineers. We've had 4 visits from professional satellite dish repair engineers. The dish feed from Public Radio International via Public Radio Satellite Services, part of NPR, works for a couple of days, and then even after we fix it and it's back up, it's back out in a couple of days. And our current engineer, who's got 30-plus years of experience in this area, is well-regarded, just was working at, you know, WXYZ radio and TV yesterday, had to come down again last night because we're down again with that professional feed. And we've had great help and support by phone from 3 engineers in Washington, D.C. at Public Radio Satellite Services who really know their stuff, but, you know, they're in Washington, D.C., and they've been advising us, recommending different consultants around here, like our present one. And now they're re-roofing our building. We can't get to the dish anymore. We can't walk on the roof while they're retarring it or whatever the surface material is. So the classical system is definitely down for another 3 days. And yes, we're playing pre-recorded shows, repeating them over each night a couple of times. And so if you listen every night, let's say at 3 a.m., you might get the same music. And we're sorry about that. But we've already invested almost $1,000 in equipment and consultants and engineers. That's, you know, 1/8 of the money that we raised during our pledge drive. And it has to come out of our budget. So we can't, you know, college doesn't come up with these things. Okay, when our whole antenna, the antenna for the whole station, 100 feet high total, when it blew down in a windstorm in the early 90s, the college did find some money to pay a significant chunk of the $30,000 that that cost to replace. Thank you very much. But that was extraordinary. You know, they can't afford to give, you know, thousands of dollars here, thousands there. So we have to raise that money. And some of our classical listeners have called in, God bless you, to say that you're tired of hearing the same thing over. We're doing everything we can. I'm working. I spent almost an hour today already on the phone with our consultant, and I expect more talking this afternoon. We're planning a plan of action, for as soon as we can get back up on the roof to the dish. We've already checked out all the equipment in our station here, and it's very frustrating. Our current engineer and even the people in Washington, D.C. are very frustrated. It doesn't usually happen this way. Satellite dishes, once they're in, are usually pretty secure, and ours have been going up and then down for no reason that we can figure out. So I just want to say we're working on that, people. It's going to take, it looks like, 3 to 5 more days before we can even get on the roof again, because the roofing people don't work on the weekends, and we can't go up there this weekend because they're too far along with their work. We've got to wait till next week. As soon as they're done with the roof, we're going to get people up there. I have 2 more consultants and engineers that I can call locally that I've gotten the names for today. So my apologies. I feel directly responsible. I have done everything I can as a non-engineer. I've been carrying equipment, supplies, cables, ladders, coordinating with about 12 different people, doing everything I can to get that wonderful Classical 24 service back up and running. And there's so many other people, including our own Henry Ford College facility service engineers too. Again, they're not satellite dish repair people, but they help to get us to the roof. They even help carrying the ladders. They give us access. They negotiate with the roofing people who wanted to start 4 days ago, but they found windows of opportunity for us to go up twice. Last Friday and on Tuesday and also yesterday, 3 times, while they were just getting things in place up there before they actually started. But they're started now, so we can't get up. So very frustrating to me, but I just want to tell all of our listeners, all of our supporters, that the money we have from you is being spent rapidly for $5,000 in a new phone system that was totally failing, and now over 1,000 at this point, still counting, for engineers and new equipment to try to get this up and running. And we're still not able to do that. So, who said non-commercial local radio was easy? Nobody. Nobody. Okay. Back to the news. Here we go. In the Arab American News, they just placed a story there today, which I thought was pretty important. It'll probably be in their weekend edition coming out. Dearborn Police provides updates on major crimes and reckless driving. This happens once a year. So Chief Hadid was speaking at a press conference, but here's the story from the Arab American News. I assume the Press and Guide will have a story about it on Sunday, at least, but here it is. According to Police Chief Ron Hadid, Dearborn's crime rate saw an 11.2% reduction from 3,246 in 2016 to 2,881 so far this year, with some that he mentions, and I put in quotes here, alarming trends, quote unquote, like a 26% increase within those numbers in drug offense arrests. And also, the reckless driving rate has seen little improvement, not getting worse, but it's not getting better. So we're still giving a lot of incidents that would be related to crime that are happening. At a July 10th, it was amazing to me too, mentioning reckless driving and other kinds of, reckless driving specifically, that those were comments from a lot of the candidates for city council made in terms of things that they would improve or problems in Dearborn. Again, it wasn't an equal at the League of Women Voters Dearborn Heights forum that is available now from the cityofdearborn.org website. It's an hour and a half, I think it was. You really need to see that at the very least to see who these candidates are. You know, there's a primary election coming up on August 8th, and then 14 of the 16 council members and 2 of the 4 candidates for mayor and the top 2, I think, of 4 candidates for city clerk here in Dearborn, that will be decided on August 8th. Now, if you're not registered to vote, sorry, you missed the opportunity. That's over and done with. That cutoff was 30 days in advance, so they actually gave you until last Monday of this week, the 10th. But so if you're not already registered with the city clerk in Dearborn, you can't vote in the primary. However, you know, don't get too bummed. You could register right now, sometime before October, and vote in November. Okay, so that's, you know, but some of the decisions on who the top two or the top people who are going to be on the November ballot will be decided in August. And a lot of them were, well, at least three or four, specifically talked about the reckless driving. We got to do something about that. And here we are with Chief Haddad also saying that at least the reckless driving rate in Dearborn hasn't improved. It hasn't gotten lower, but hasn't gotten too much higher, I guess. Now, he had this press conference on July 10th, first time the papers are mentioning it, though. It takes a while to write these stories. I mean, it does, sure, and try to balance them and maybe do a little research in addition to the press release. Anyway, it was at the Dearborn Administrative Center, and Haddad shared updates about the major crimes that have taken place since the end of last year, as well as the driving issues dominating the city. Haddad asked for the public's vigilance and assistance in two recent crimes, one of which involves the theft of credit card and debit card information. He said the ATM skimmer takes the information by attaching the device to the slot of the automated teller machines or gas pumps. The device scans the numbers on the card, which then allows the person to use or withdraw money whenever they wish. Police said the footage showed one person who's involved in two new skimming cases in the city is also believed to be connected to similar crimes in Garden City and Canton Township, but that two men are actually working together. The second suspect is in a car and cannot be seen clearly. The skimmers are driving a first-generation silver Nissan Murano and another it's a small SUV, and another unknown dark-colored vehicle. The chief also requested help identifying the suspect responsible for a vehicle larceny around Michigan Avenue and Gully. He said the older white man with glasses, who has short white hair and tattoos on both arms, seemed to be targeting contractors as he strolled around stealing tools from commercial vans parked in the area. Haddad said that the three men who robbed a jewelry store on Warren Avenue near Schaefer Road on December 21st by disguising themselves as customers, one even posing as a Muslim woman in a full robe and hijab, were sentenced last week after accepting plea deals. Wayne County Circuit Judge Paul Cusick sentenced these people and for armed robbery and 2 years of felony, 5 to 20 for armed robbery and 2 years for felony with a firearm. While one of them received the five to 20 years for armed robbery, Haddad then addressed the pharmacy break-ins that occurred in January in Dearborn, Detroit, and several other cities. He said that the Dearborn Police, Detroit Police, and the FBI discovered that the 11 incidents were linked to multiple suspects, vehicles, and residencies throughout Metro Detroit. Quote from the chief, he said, "We have three people already in custody. I'm not going to give you a lot of details as this is an ongoing investigation." As for vehicle larcenies, Haddad said the community has been active through the Lock It or Lose It campaign, which the police department started, of course, which aims to reduce thefts by reminding people to lock their vehicles. So it's not theft of the car, per se. Although, yes, if you didn't lock your car, they could steal your whole car, but it's also stealing things from your car, too. On June 9th, one community member followed 20-year-old Marcus Timmons of Detroit. I didn't want to read the names. And someone else, too, after noticing their unsuccessful attempt to steal tires off a car. But the resident didn't lose sight of the two and helped police to catch them. That's always helpful. By the way, there is and I can't remember the numbers now. It's 943-something, but there's a police department hotline number, and it's anonymous. You can report a suspected crime or an actual crime and give a lead to help the police out here if you know something. And it's completely anonymous, even to the police. So if you want it to be that way. If you don't, then just call them anyway and let them know what's going on. So a lot of these things that happened have been, just skimming down the article now, have been adjudicated. And people have been, you know, found guilty and paying fines, serving time. Okay. And but in terms of the Dearborn Police Narcotics Unit, you know, they're having, as I said, 26% increase in drug-related offenses, which is considered usually minor crime, not necessarily major crime. So it doesn't always get into the major crime statistics, depending on the nature of what the drug offense was. But Haddad said, quote, when you look at the crisis that America is facing now, one guy like this, we're talking about one particular person that they had grabbed in our mix just really makes a bad situation worse. We're going, I guess, as someone would call him, a bad dude. We're going to continue to seek out doctors that do this kind of thing in our community and charge them with the highest types of crimes that we can. So it's a prescription narcotics operation that they broke. So Haddad said he was glad to share that on July 7th, the Wayne County Circuit Court jury convicted the two armed men, one of whom was masked, who walked into the police station on February 5th. And this is a story that the papers already did pick up. I think the Press and Guide already has it on their website. They were doing it as support for, they weren't going to try to shoot anybody. That wasn't their intent in the police department. But to try to emphasize their freedom to bear arms, including automatic weapons, I think. But there's laws against certain kinds of things. So carrying a concealed weapon, I guess without a permit, felony resisting and opposing an officer, and also disturbing the peace. One of them was convicted on. The other person was also convicted of carrying a concealed weapon, too. And sentencing will be on August 18th. Haddad said, we got support from all over the world. Most people said that if somebody would have tried this at their location, it wouldn't have ended up the way it did in Dearborn. Which means cops might have just mowed them down with their grass mowers. No, probably just shot them. You know, 'cause how would they know what the intent was? But they talked it out on both sides, but then they had to take them into custody because they were breaking certain laws, like concealed weapon. Yes, I know Michigan has that crazy law that open carry is allowed in almost every place. Okay, but then there's disturbing the peace. And then there's, of course, a concealed weapon without a permit in certain locations, too. You can't carry a concealed weapon everywhere in Michigan, even if you have the permit. Now, you never know. Things are changing. Legislature is constantly in Michigan and the federal government. The Republicans are passing all kinds of laws to allow more citizens to carry guns more places. Open carry, concealed carry, either and sometimes even without permits. Those things are all being proposed. But it varies from city to city, state to state. I think it should be a federal ruling so that people know they go from Michigan to Ohio with their gun, whether it's just for target practice or maybe to sell it at a gun show or something. What are the rules about having it in your car? Does it have to be locked somewhere? Does it have to be in your trunk locked? There are different rules in different states, and I think that's very inconvenient. I personally, and of course all opinions on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, not faculty, staff, or students, or administrators. But my personal opinion, which I'm just tossing out there, is that I'm in favor of individual citizens owning firearms, including handguns. However, I see nothing wrong with background checks. I see nothing wrong with licensing. Just so you know. But I'm also in favor on the licensing thing is that everybody should pass not just a written exam about the rules, the basic rules in Michigan and their own city for carrying and using a firearm, but also observation of them on a firing range. I mean, can they shoot straight or not? Can they handle the weapon in a safe manner or not? Because they might be more of a danger to themselves as well as to other people if they can't. And just like a test on the road of a driver before they get a driver's license, or it's not for renewal, unfortunately. I think it should be. But, you know, it's essential. We don't have that in Michigan. except there is a training course involved, including shooting, a shooting range experience anyway, not overseen by police, but by an instructor. And so if you pass that course, though, then you can qualify for a concealed weapon permit that you can carry a gun in many places, but not every community and not every facility. So they have at least some training required by law for concealed carry permits, again, which are not, doesn't allow concealed carry all the time everywhere, but still. Okay. But I think there should be more licensing. There should be more background checks, and there should be more training. Yeah. All for training. Dangerous weapons like automobiles. You need a lot of training there before they let you on the road. Okay. Let's see, anything else in the story about the chief? Because this is a big story, and people are always talking about, oh, what's the crime rate? Well, the crime rate is still better than the reckless driving rate. The overall crime rate in Dearborn de-escalated, but the chief acknowledged the 26% increase, as we mentioned before, in drug offense arrests is startling. And he said, we've arrested 588 people. I think we've launched a holistic approach to trying to educate our community. When we find people in violation that further endanger our community by selling pills, we're going to take action against them. Yeah, people think a lot of all the drug crime. I think of drug crime, I think of marijuana, heroin. I think of shooting up or smoking up or whatever. When in fact, it's a lot of pills these days. And a lot of them are prescription drugs that are readily distributed, either because doctors are just writing too many prescriptions or people who get the prescriptions are selling them outright and not taking the drugs themselves. But there's a real problem with prescription drugs that are getting into society for people to take. And if you've been following the news, of course, the so-called opioid addiction rate is not just people shooting up heroin. It's largely people taking heroin and heroin derivatives, opioids, is the general category, that were originally prescribed, prescription drugs. That's where the big addiction is. And I was interested, going back to the candidate forum, the candidates are all talking about, oh, we've got to tell our kids about this, got to tell our kids about this. Where most opioid addiction, as I understand it, is with the adults these days. Because they're the ones that got on prescription, maybe by prescription, they got on opioids from their doctors. And really hard to get off of it, and then maybe they can't afford more, or they have to take something stronger, and then they go to illegal sources to obtain them at a certain point. And their health gets worse, and crime related to maybe stealing or theft to get money to buy more illegal drugs. But it's not just, yes, we have to tell our kids the facts about all kinds of different drugs. Legal and illegal, because there's some new ones, designer drugs they're called, that might technically be legal right now, but they're dangerous. Sure, we got to tell our kids about them. We got to tell our kids a lot of things. We got to be good educators as adults, as parents. But the opioid addiction problem is mostly with adults. And an awful lot of those people started by prescription through a doctor. Haddad is totally right. It's the pills, it's the opioid addiction, and even the safe driving initiative, too. About 6 weeks ago, police started the safe driving initiative because there was a bad increase in fatalities and injury accidents on our streets. He said police have impounded 300 cars for drag racing. There was comments about that, too, drag racing in the local residential areas of Dearborn from our candidates for city council. Again, three or four or five made a big deal about not just reckless driving, but drag racing on the residential streets. Crazy, isn't that? Crazy. Yes, it is. And they've already impounded 300 cars. So you do that sort of drag racing and they catch you, and I bet they can catch you. you're going to lose your car. That seems appropriate. Probably shouldn't lose your license too. I assume you would. Anyway, he says, you can see that the numbers are quite alarming. The chief says we're going to continue to educate and enforce. The safety of our community comes first. So that's the report from Chief Haddad, who is the police chief here in Dearborn, from the Arab American News. What else is happening here? I wanted to mention the passing of former consul person, actually consulwoman Nancy Hubbard, passed away Tuesday morning at age 84. Yes, she was related to Mayor Orville Hubbard, as many people know, but she had a distinguished career here in Dearborn on the city council and in many other capacities in the community. And was even, the number two biggest vote getter for many years, 16 years, I think, as the president pro temp, they call it, the number two, the replacement chairperson or whatever on the city council, shows she was well regarded and greatly supported by the community. One of her, her late brother John, one of his daughters, Susan Hubbard, is currently a Wayne County Circuit Court judge, who also used to serve on the Dearborn City Council and Wayne County Commission. So private funeral services are being held today, by the way. For those that are keeping up with the town. Let's see here. Don't have time to go into the full story, but Trenton has an interesting question. You know how Dearborn Heights, I mentioned, has actually taken action to preserve a golf course that Wayne County actually owned in, you know, contiguous in their city area. And they have now taken action to buy it themselves rather than let it be sold and developed into condos or something. The people wanted to keep it as, I would call it a green area, although there's a lot of things about golf courses that are not so environmentally sound, like the way they keep the grass green, sometimes with pretty nasty pesticides and fertilizers. That are not really good for the environment. And it takes a lot of water, even in Michigan, even with the rain we've been having recently, to keep the grass green. So, but they came up with a sizable chunk. I can't remember the exact amount. Well, City of Trenton right now has had a big discussion going, should they purchase a vacant McClouth Steel site? I didn't know that McClouth had a site that wasn't already sold to someone, but it would be $2.5 million, and at the last meeting in Trenton, there was a big turnout of the public, it looks like. I see a picture here from the News Herald website that, City Council didn't want to go for it, but it looks like they're going to continue thinking about it, but they have a small window of opportunity, for whatever reasons, to make a deal. Apparently, Wayne County will have the option to purchase it for $3.3 million. But what will happen to it if Wayne County buys it? Are they going to make a golf course out of it? I don't think so. Probably going to turn around to make a profit by selling condo space or something. But Trenton has some problems with it. Obviously, $2.5 million is a lot of money for any city. That's a big question for them, and we can't cover it any more than that right now. Okay, what else here? Okay, reaching over to the news, all the news that fits, you know. Okay, well, I'd like to play a comment from Jack Lessenberry here. And we're talking about teachers for Henry Ford College. But here's Jack Lessenberry's comment from this week about state aid to private schools.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. The Michigan Court of Claims is not one of the highest profile judicial bodies in the country, or even our state. It handles civil actions filed against the state and its various departments and agencies. But that court is getting a lot more attention these days because of one case with blockbuster implications. Last year, the Michigan legislature passed a $2.5 million budget appropriation to reimburse private schools for non-educational things the state requires, like playground inspections. The American Civil Liberties Union and a number of education-related groups believe spending public money for anything having to do with private schools violates both the U.S. and Michigan constitutions and a filed suit in the Court of Claims. Last week, the judge handling the case, Cynthia Diane Stevens, extended a temporary freeze on those payments. Judge Stevens indicated she'll decide whether to continue or lift the freeze by August 1st. However, it seems to me that this is really a case that could have been decided pretty much immediately. Both the state constitution and the voters are on record as saying this would be illegal. No taxpayer dollars can ever be used to support private schools in any way. Here's a little background. Back in 1970, the governor and the legislature decided the state should provide some support to private schools. They passed a law doing just that. The only restriction was that the money could not be used for instruction in religious subjects. That was upheld by the state Supreme Court. But a coalition of forces swiftly came together to oppose what they called parochiate. They noted that specifying that this money couldn't be used for religious instruction was meaningless, since by picking up the tab for non-religious expenses, the state was in fact leaving the schools more money for religious instruction. Those opposing parochiate quickly collected signatures and got a state constitutional amendment on the ballot. In that November, a solid 57% of the voters chose to make any aid to private schools clearly unconstitutional. They amended the Constitution to say, "No public monies or properties shall be appropriated or paid by the legislature or any other political subdivision or agency of the state, directly or indirectly, to aid or maintain any private, denominational, or other private, pre-elementary, elementary, or secondary schools. No payment, credit, tax benefit, exemptions, deduction, tuition voucher, subsidy, grant, or loan of public property shall be provided directly or indirectly to support any such private school." The full amendment is actually longer, but it's clear that Judge Stevens should rule the appropriation fully unconstitutional and send the lawmakers a message saying, "What part of no don't you understand?" Now, those in favor of providing the funding to religious schools are pinning their hopes on a U.S. Supreme Court decision last month that said taxpayer-funded grants for playgrounds in Missouri couldn't be denied to a school run by a church. But Chief Justice John Roberts expressly said the ruling only applied to discrimination and playground resurfacing, period. We don't know how the Supreme Court would rule in the Michigan case, but the state constitution is clear. Providing any aid to private schools is illegal in the state, and it's hard for me to imagine a judge ruling any other way.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Yes, so I hope you pay attention to that. It is in place now. It has been voted on and signed by the governor yesterday that this new pension plan for the teachers, which again, the K-12 teachers, it does hurt them. It does cut them down. Not all the state employees have to suffer this way. So one question is, why not the others too? But I guess you don't want to have your state police suffering. Let those teachers suffer, because they're only in charge of the education of your kids, right? And what incentive is there to become a teacher in Michigan? Yes, I know there was that crazy study, I think I mentioned it to Dr. Nealon, that teachers are pretty well paid in Michigan, compared to their communities. But in fact, as a professional with a master's or a doctorate degree, compared to other professions, I humbly suggest to you, they are not. Well, that's all for today. Hope we stimulated you, challenged you, think things through, get some verif-